Cliffcentral. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Made Sessions with Cliffcentral.com. My name is Mbalin Jomane, and it's really good to be here. So, our guest today is Simpiwe Mthethwa. She is not only a listener of the Made Sessions, she's also a producer here at CliffCentral.com, as well as a content creator in her own right. So for those of you who are new to the Made Sessions, or maybe even listening for the very first time, or even those of you who've been listening from the very beginning, we thank you. But we thought that we'd bring her in to give you all a fresh perspective on our content. In addition, for those of you who love the growing medium of podcasting, as listeners or perhaps as potential podcasters yourselves, I wanted to talk to her about the gaps and opportunities in South African storytelling. Hello, hello. Thanks for joining me, lovely.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good at you. Thanks for the title, you know, like producer. Wow.
Oh my God, no, it was such an understatement. No, it was so modest. You are the resident expert today. I know nothing.
Okay. I'm flattered.
School is in.
That's quite like big shoes that you're like putting like the pressure. Hey?
Those are your shoes.
I'm gonna try sound smart and hopefully say the right things and people learn something.
Okay, I hope so too. So let's hit it now.
Yes.
So tell us, what's been your favorite thing about the Made Session so far?
It's an authentic conversation. That a lot of South Africans can relate to. I for one, grew up in a household where we didn't have a helper.
Right. You never had a helper? You're one of those.
Yes. I'm purely based
on... How are you alive?
So this is the reason. I live with my grandmother and my sister.
Right.
So my grandmother stays at home and she was like, there's no need to have a helper.
Okay.
I am here and I'll clean. And you are girls as well. And therefore you will tidy up after yourselves.
Sure.
And so I grew up in that kind of space where I'd come back home, it's cooked, it's clean, my gran, and weekends then we'd take over. And only now in her older years, where we considering getting a helper
right.
Because we're like, okay, no, you can't do the same things that you used to do before. And it's just been so intriguing and so enlightening to kind of now be in that position where you're like, okay, now we need to screen people, but this is what we want, this is what we don't want, because we also young.
Oh.
And then also hearing the stories of other people, you know, my friends have had helpers, so when I was around their house, I always felt like they didn't have a helper because we always had to do it and clean up after
ourselves. That's funny. But what did you think growing up about this idea of having a domestic worker if you didn't have one in your own home?
It was pretty chilled because I think with my friends, when I went over to their house, the helper would always be like, yeah, you guys better clean up.
Right? Yourself. She would boss you around.
Yeah, so I was always like, then why the hell do you guys have this lady? Like you can, isn't the whole point for like someone to clean? Like,
it's so true. I remember that.
Yeah, we'd make the dishes and then like now I have to clean the dishes. I'm like, this is the same thing as being at home. Like, guys, I thought I was on a break. But like now when I look back at it, I'm like, I'm so thankful that they did that. And I'm so thankful that they instilled that, like, you need to clean after yourself.
Right.
And that
so do you
was
feel
so
like
cool.
You're better off having never had a helper?
Yeah.
Because obviously with your grandmother, there's boundaries, right? Because part of her role is actually to be your parent and to teach you self-discipline and how to look after yourself, right? So there's a limit to how much she will do for you. And you definitely can't, like, order her around.
Yeah, most definitely. But it's also been cool in terms of, I think, trust.
Mm.
You know, I think I'm extremely close to my grandmother because, you know, she'd do the laundry and she'd be like, Zama, you can't do this, you can't do that. And you're like, And then next minute, she would say, please move this. And then you know where all so my grandmother's a hoarder. So she'd be like, every time we cleaned, we'd be like, oh, let's throw this out. And she'd be like, no, there's a story behind that. So we shared a lot of moments together in terms of cleaning, in terms of chilling together.
Oh, okay.
So that was like, I think.
That's so interesting.
Yes. Where it's been very fun and like
it's
we have
bonded you.
Yes, we and now in like the older years, it's kind of a bit harder now because my sister and myself are still quite young. So to get somebody else to be like, okay, this is how we actually like things ironed.
Yeah.
This is how it's hard because we never had to say that to my grandmother. She got it, or she would teach us that, no, my darling, this is how you do things.
Does it feel awkward? How does it feel?
Sometimes. I mean, so I think it was a week or two ago, my sister's like, she wants to just bring this lady just to see, to test the waters. And it was quite weird because she's very different in the language, and we're like, there's somebody new in the house, and it was just very different.
Do you know how to be a boss?
In the household? No, I'm the last born.
Yeah, exactly.
So I still get told what to do, what not to do.
Right.
But we're learning that. We're learning how to bring somebody from the outside and let them in and say, okay, this is how we like things. Hmm. This is how we place things. Hmm. And also still cleaning up after ourselves.
Okay. So then listening to the Maid Sessions, what kind of perspective do you feel like it's given you on the process?
Oh, it's given me like the insight of what some of the helpers have gone through and what they think. It's also changed my view on certain things, on people. You know, with Kaya and his tweet that he found his helper in the shower or something like that. And it was like, wow, okay, like, I don't understand why people are shocked. Like, and I think one thing about me is that when I was going to high school, I used to take a local taxi in the morning. And that cab ride was always the best because it was actually the ladies going to work. So they'd share secrets. So I was always like, what happened this week? And then
like a first-hand maid sessions.
Yeah. Oh. So they'd always share like, I stole this, or she did this. And I didn't know who they worked for. So I was just like, I don't care who the names are, but this is entertaining. And getting to hear that, oh, you know what, this really does happen. And it's not just happening in the East Rand.
Jeez, so that was something that, those broader. Are stories you found interesting before there was even a podcast.
Yes.
That was something you enjoyed.
I made sure I was not late for that taxi. That's 7 o'clock taxi, I knew. And it just, I thought it was like an East Rand thing. I was like, these ladies. But then you listen to the podcast and you're like, oh no, this is happening everywhere. This is, you know, something that South Africans actually relate to. That yeah, she came home.
Dude, that's so cool though, because this is kind of what I want to talk to you about, is like, I feel like sometimes we overproduce South African stories, right? Like in the media or when we podcast, you know, the minute you're given a medium, a television show, a radio show, right? There's a temptation to kind of overproduce, when actually a lot of the really good stuff comes out of authentic South African conversations. It's almost about being a fly on the wall.
Yes.
Right?
I think sometimes when we've watched so much other content, international content, European content, that we think that when we produce something, it needs to be as dramatic, as crazy. I mean, if you look at reality shows, you see that they're beating each other and they're calling each other bitch. You know, and then you come to South Africa and we try.
I don't know what that was, but
people get it. But like, and you come to South Africa and when they think of reality shows, the first thing they're thinking is that show, that, oh no, all the girls have to be snatched and they need to be beat. And they're forgetting that's not who we are.
So we kind
that's
of
not
force
how we,
that.
Yeah, that's not how we talk. I don't talk we like that to my friends.
Right.
And
okay, so let me stop you there because I want to get into that later. But more on the maid sessions. Okay, so this is amazing to me. This was like something that existed in your life before we actually created this show, right?
Yes.
Which is fantastic. What has most surprised you on the maid sessions?
Ooh, I think it is the ambition that some of the ladies you have had.
Yeah.
I think sometimes I've been very ignorant about domestic workers in terms of they have dreams. And they also want to achieve things in life. And sometimes we just kind of like forget that they're also human and that they also want to be given an opportunity. We always see it as, oh, domestic worker and her child, so I'll help the child. But we never really help the lady that works for you.
Dude,
never empower her.
True. We always think it's over for them. So anyone who wants to intervene is thinking about the child's school fees, the child's future, but never about them. It's so true. That's so, such a good insight.
I think that's been one of the things that I'm like, oh my word, okay, I've noticed that this is a problem, and hopefully I'll start when I ever get a help with it. I'm not going to start saying, okay, how can I help you and your child? Let's start with you.
That's so true, though, and it's also true for the way they think of themselves, because it actually takes us a while with any lady, on average, to get them to a point where they think about themselves.
Yes.
So they think beyond the family that they work for and beyond their own children and their own family and start to think about themselves as individuals. And oftentimes they'll be surprised by questions we ask them about their personal ambitions, because it's not something that they apply their mind to either. So, I think that's actually a really powerful insight. And that for you to get that out of this is incredible. And I hope more people have too.
I hope so too. And I hope that they've gotten more things. But that, I think that's been the one thing that's stuck out the most. Strong. And I'm just like, ooh, I'm actually also a victim of this. Mm. So let me change my mindset and how I want to pave it forward when I do have a helper one day.
So now kind of having a helper in your home, do you think of her more as an individual?
I think it takes time for people to build a bond with someone. So I was brought up in an African household where anybody older than you in a certain age bracket, Sisi, Oma. Mm. And so I'm still getting to a point where I can call you Ma, but still be very, direct in what I'd like you to do.
Yeah.
Because it's also hard to be like, yeah, Ma, so can you please, do this? Or I didn't like you doing that. It's very difficult. So it's learning that. I'm grateful and thankful that my grandmother's still alive. So she's the one person that we run to and be like, yo, okay, we didn't like this,
hard.
And then she can go and be because she's the older, the eldest in the family. So if she speaks, then there's kind of like a tone that she has to follow. But we're also trying to find our own voices in terms of young African women to be like, yeah, Ma, so this is not how we
That's
like
a huge
it
thing. And actually, Tuliza's going to be doing a show on that at a later stage. But it's incredibly hard because we're taught as African children not to be overly familiar with people who are older than us.
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't matter whether it's your domestic worker, whether it's your own parents, your aunts, your uncles, whether it's somebody you meet at the shop. Yes. We're just told if somebody's a certain age, you're not overly familiar.
Yes.
But then it's hard when somebody's playing such an intimate role in your life, and their role is actually to enable you and to help you. That needs to be, there needs to be open communication. And so often that person's older than you.
Yeah.
It's difficult, huh?
Extremely.
So that's going to be a really good show, and that's something we're going to discuss in depth in the coming weeks. But who do you think should listen to The Mateticians?
Everybody. The one thing I like about it is it's not like targeting a specific group of people, even though it's a specific topic.
Mm.
From your CEOs to your housewives to me just chilling here at work to kids in high school to domestic workers themselves, I think they need to listen to it because it's so... We live in a world, or we as humans, we always like to think, why is this happening to me? Why am I going through this? And we always say, I'm so alone. No, you're not.
You're not that special.
And to just open up those conversations, because 10 to 1 there's somebody else out there who's having a problem with their domestic worker who does not know how to treat them. There's somebody who's being racist. There's somebody being rude. There's somebody underpaying. There's somebody who's like, I've never had a domestic worker in my life, so what are the rules and how do I go about getting one? So everybody.
Awesome. And I think just to expand on that question, why do you think it's important to have podcasts like The Mateticians?
I'm a huge believer in conversation, and I believe that conversations drive change. Mm. And I think if we don't talk about something, then it's not going to change at all. Right. And I think this is step one in changing the narrative and how we as South Africans see ourselves, and we as South Africans value ourselves.
Mm.
It's so sad that most of the domestic workers in South Africa are not South African, and B, also that it's females from the townships, and it's kind of like looked down upon. I was telling a friend the other day that, in America, they're quite actually
America.
they're very like okay with like females and strippers. Like, you know, that's their last resort. If if everything else fails,
I'll become a stripper
right. And I'll get money and, you know. Whereas in South Africa, if everything else fails, you become a domestic worker.
That's interesting, huh?
Which is so scary. And it's like, why? And I think it's so important.
It's a very interesting parallel, sure.
So it's very... I'd like us to have those conversations so that we could drive change in the future.
Because both things, I think, commodify like things that you wouldn't normally commodify. So, you know, being a stripper commodifies your sexuality.
Yes.
Right? And being a domestic worker commodifies, and we've spoken about this a lot, your caregiving. Your maternal instinct in many ways. It's fascinating, huh?
Yes, it is. So I think personally, those conversations, if we don't have them, then people are not going to know. As I said, I was ignorant about the fact that, you know, domestic workers actually do have ambition and they do, and we never empower them. So how do we pay it forward now? How do we change that? And that would, I would have not seen that. I would have not thought of that had these conversations not arisen and had I not been listening and been like, hold up.
Okay.
I think I might be a problem in this. Okay. All right. So how do I change? But yeah, it's just one of those.
And it is. It's much easier to admit that you're a problem if you know that you're not the only one.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a sense of community. As I said, when I was going to high school, those taxi rides were the best because I knew that there was some juice and there was some tea and everything spilled. So, yeah.
I want you to put your producer and your kind of creative cap on, because I think you've articulated very well how from a social perspective and from a societal perspective, it's important for us to have these conversations and to kind of shed light on these issues. But how about from a creative perspective, in terms of content creation, why is it important to tap into conversations like these?
I'm such a huge believer in telling the South African story.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is purely based, it's a South African story. And I believe that people need to tap more into that. We have such a beautiful heritage, and yes, there are parts of it where it's dark and scary. Apartheid is a real thing, but there's also been beautiful things that have come out of it, where we've had Nelson Mandela. We've experienced such luxuries of certain people dying for our freedom. We're experiencing new money, as a lot of people coin it now. We're experiencing so much that I think no one wants to tell it in a truly South African way. I'm black and I'm proud of it. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying that. It doesn't make me racist. It doesn't make me say that I hate white people.
It's true. Our black story is so authentic.
I'm proud of it. And I feel like we just need to be able to just hone in ourselves and being proud of telling those stories, that it's okay that we don't know how to speak English properly, but we know how to speak vernacular languages fluently. That's fine. I think it's important that also people need to have gone through something. So I think that's the best way to tell a story. For me personally, I take taxis every day. So if I had to come up with a story, I'd be truthful in what I'm representing.
We don't tell enough of our backstories, because I think when we all self-actualize and we reach our kind of goals and our aspirations on a material level, so say we all have iPhones and we all live in Hyde Park and we drive BMWs, right?
Yeah.
Our backstories are completely different. So those things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might look the same at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, when I see you 10 years from now, we're both successful and our lives look similar. Right? It's easy to assume that like we're the same person, but we're not.
Yeah. And I think that's what's missing. I think we need to just embrace, you know, certain things. As I was saying, that, you know, I take taxis every day. So if I had to come up with like a story and someone's like, how do we market this to taxi people? It's so easy for me to tell you how people in taxis are and what they behave like, because I'm
there.
It's an
opportunity as well.
I'm there. I'm in it. And too many times we have people from outside who have never taken a taxi, have never been in a taxi, have never been in Joburg CBD, don't know the etiquettes of taxis. And then they'll be like, I think we should do a show on that. And now you have their perspective of what goes down in a taxi and they lingo and what they think. And it's like, And then we're like, South African productions are bad, they're horrible. No, it's because the wrong person is telling that story. That's it.
So we need to own our stories, first of all. And second of all, we need to not try to tell other people's stories.
True. And we need to be proud of it. It took me, I mean, when I started working here, I'd buy like fat cakes, and it took me like a while to get comfortable eating fat cakes around like people who don't necessarily eat it. Yeah. And now I'm just like, screw it, I like this. It's cheap and I can afford it.
It's delicious.
It's absolutely delicious.
They want it too.
Yes. And because now I'm confident in it and I'm okay with it, it's gone like, oh, today you bought, why didn't you buy me some type of vibe? Because now I'm embracing that.
It's so interesting that, and when you embrace it, I think that you also, you give people around you the confidence as well. First of all, to embrace that about themselves, but also to be curious,
yes,
to be confident, right? And yes, like approach you and say, hey, what is this? And, you know, like, yes, like I'm curious. I want to try it too. And I think that, you know, we often hear the story about kids who are raised by their domestic workers, and particularly white kids who enjoy going to the domestic worker's room and eating the food that she eats.
Yes.
Right? And that's always something that's done in secret, you know? And it's always a story people will tell fondly when they're adults, you know,
yes,
that that's something they used to do and their parents didn't know. But it's exactly what you're saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I think it's also just dealing with that confidence to say, okay, I'm a black Zulu girl who likes fat cakes. I also like, I'm a keep. I like this, I like that. And we might paint it as, oh, this is what black people eat. But best believe I can also tell you I like sushi.
Exactly.
I like this.
Right.
I like that.
Right.
I like oysters.
One
I like,
or the other.
You know?
Yeah.
So you can't exactly paint me in one brush and be like, yeah, you just eat fat cakes.
Yeah.
I eat a variety of things. And if I like it and if it's, you know, delicious, then I'll eat it.
Yeah.
But it's important to be comfortable in the fact that if I eat tripe, then I can also eat sushi.
But also if, and for me, this is such an important thing. If we carry certain things with shame, then other people respond to that. You know, that's what they read into whatever it is that we're carrying with shame. And it becomes kind of this chicken and egg scenario that creates stigma, you know? And you're complicit in creating that stigma. If you're ashamed to begin with, you know, whereas if you bring out your boiled egg, I mean, we're all ashamed of boiled eggs, but, you know, we all eat boiled eggs. So
yeah,
it's like one of those really daft things. But I suppose we're like, you know, it's, you don't want to be the person who's causing the smell in the room or the stink in the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's something in not hiding that also gives other people the space to inquire.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
It's been fun. It's been so fun because I also understand, like, for years and centuries, you know, we've kind of, as black people, have been told, oh, ooh, this, oh, that, oh, ooh, oh. And now we're learning to find a voice. And I think it's the best time to be alive because I'm being part of that change. You know, I'm being part of that when I bring something to work or eat something. People will be like, what's that? I'm like, oh, this is this. And you get to educate other people and you get to be like, yeah. And as I look at it, you're like, yeah, so it might be two or three people that have been educated about this, but that two or three white people are going to educate other people and it's going to have a ripple effect.
It's awesome. This is such a cool analogy, actually, because I want to ask you why you think demographics such as domestic workers are largely untapped by content creators. And what I have found is a lot of people are scared of the space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do, and it goes both ways in terms of stigma. I think domestic workers are ashamed, and then I think people are ashamed of the way they treat domestic workers. But it creates an awkwardness around the space where people are afraid to approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of like the boiled egg scenario.
Yes. I think one thing to add on that is, we as people, we don't like the truth, you know, and we want to always escape. That's why we love social media.
Mm.
You know, it's a form of escaping from your current problems. See somebody else with a yacht and be like, one day, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So when you have conversations like, or platforms like Made Sessions, where people are having those conversations, those uncomfortable conversations, you know, it makes them like, oh my gosh, question who they are and were they brought up right? You know, why do they do this? Why don't they do this?
Mm.
And I think it's also one where people, I think they have the stigma or they think that, oh, But domestic workers, what do they bring to the table? They bring nothing to the table. Are they going to support and buy the shoe? No. So why do I need to even market them? Market to them? You know, there's this perception that, you know, they don't bring anything of value except be able to take care of my child.
Which is something of massive value, by the way.
Yeah, but I think people look at it from an economic perspective. I'm like, why should I try sell the soap to a domestic worker when I can sell it to the employer who has the money, who earns 15,000 or above or whatever? And you miss the whole point that if Sis Miriam is like, yo, I don't like the soap.
Exactly.
Best believe they're not going to buy that soap.
Precisely.
So who do you need to be marketing to? Who do you need to be talking to? It is that lady that uses the product every day. But we don't want to have those conversations and we don't want to admit that. It's the same thing like when you see ads where people are dancing around when girls are having their period. That we don't know. No one's dancing. So it's the same thing. Like, why aren't you talking to females about what happens when you have your period? It's the same thing.
Why do you think we do this kind of superficial appraisal of people? Do you think it's because we're afraid to, like, really get in there because of a fear of the unknown?
Yes. But I think we're also scared to be like, okay, this... I think for the longest of time, we've always painted ourselves, me as a black person, this is what we do, this is who we are. And as the years have kind of gone by in freedom and democracy, we realize there's been a change. You have black kids that have grown up in the suburb, and therefore they can't relate to township life. They've maybe had a gota once or twice and that's about it. Then you've had kids that have only experienced gasi life and they, you know, fede fede shosho. So, and then you have people that have grown up in the rural area. So that's a different demographic altogether. We now are filling up different spaces, which before we didn't. We all in the township.
So that's confusing to marketers.
And yeah, so they're like, oh, but you're still black. So they still have that mentality that, oh, because you're black, you still behave that way. Yeah. No, darling, I've moved on. We've grown. You know, we can talk English. We can talk, you know, we can have tea. And 9 o'clock. I'm just saying, but... You know, there's somebody else out there who thinks like me, who acts like me, but does not speak English. She'll speak fluent Zulu. But people forget that. And people are like, oh, yeah, you guys are all the same. Therefore, this
We're very
works.
Superficial about what diversity is, huh?
Yes, we are. And it's I think it's a South African problem because even the way we describe ourselves, yes, I am South African and I'll be traveling Africa. Boo, you are in Africa.
Dude.
You are in Africa.
I was that guy for a long time.
You know what I mean? So we always paint us like we like to think that I am different and then everybody else is the same.
So ridiculous.
Which is sad. It's so sad because you're like, how can you alone be different? How you then?
Where did you come from?
And then everybody else is the same. Like, wait, hold up. And how we put ourselves up there. Like, oh yes, I live in South Africa. Not Africa. South Africa. Darling, bye. Okay. Bye. 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 But I think it's just that where we ourselves as South Africans, we just have so many double standards. And yeah.
So true. Okay. So what other powerful voices then do you think are underrepresented in our entertainment and media?
The first one that comes to mind is plus size. I'm a plus size.
Yes, girl. Yes. Pareach.
I'm a big girl. I'm a plus size girl. And growing up, I was fairly active. I played several sports. I did a lot of cultural things.
Mind you look sporty. Like, you have a lot of energy. So I think this is a fallacy, you know? This idea that plus size women are not energetic.
Yeah. But I was always a bit thick, you know? So I was just like, okay, this is it. This is, you know what? And then you watch TV and you read books and you see, and you're like, but no one looks like me.
Mind you, so many of our mothers and aunts who do hard labor, you know, you talk about domestic workers, you go to rural areas,
ooh,
right?
Yeah, yo.
Those women are plus size, but they are athletes. They are
They can walk and walk and walk and walk uphill, down slopes. And I'm just like, wow. So for me, it's like, I always feel like I never saw females that looked like me. And when I did, they as you said, they looked tired. They looked, I was just like, oh no. It was such a negative connotation behind being plus size. And I was just like, what's wrong with me then? Like, if this is such a negative thing, why am I this girl who's big? And you know what? And eventually I was like, screw it. They talking rubbish and I want to change that. So I think number one, plus size. Even though we live in a country.
That's definitely something we need to talk about more, because it's again that stigma, that shame issue, where a lot of women then become ashamed of how they look and they create this awkward vibe, right, around themselves, where people, even men, for instance, or marketers, for instance, are afraid to talk to them.
Yes. And, you know, it's so funny. I did a speech that said, Cosmo thinks I'm fat. And in that, I stated that we live in a country where majority of girls are a size 36 and above.
Right.
That means most girls are thick and they plus size. Yet you walk into the mall and all you find is things for a size 8. What's wrong? Something is wrong. Like, why aren't we selling clothes for people that actually live in this country? And
it's a huge market, like you're saying, but nobody wants to talk about it. Yes. This is what I'm saying. Why does no one want it to? And we're all complicit.
Yes, we are. So that's number one. And number two, the diversity in language. Growing up, back in the day before we had DSTV and we had only the free channels, Friday nights were lit. You would watch a show it was shows that were in vernacular languages. So in Sotho, Zulu, whatever. And we would like eat that up, you know, and we'd know that, you know, the show is playing at this time, that. Right. And now it's kind of, it's gone. You hardly find any shows where
you feel like it's all English.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm Zulu. I don't speak fluent Zulu, but I'd love to watch more shows that talk and represent me as a young Zulu girl.
And I think the best shows are actually multilingual. And I kind of love that about shows like, you know, Generations. I don't know. I haven't watched in ages. But back when it was good,
yes.
You know, people used to speak different languages to one another. And then there were subtitles.
Yes. So I think, you know, we're missing that. I mean, currently at the moment, I feel like, okay, we only have Isibaya. Okay, sharp.
That's
great.
Just Zulu for the most part. Yes, you know what I'm saying?
That doesn't represent the other 10 official languages that we have. And it's easy to, I mean, there's soapies that have been on for years and years that we can say, oh, but this ticks, but it's only one. Why do we only have one? Whereas you turn on the corridor and there are thousands and thousands of series in English, you know, why can't we have like a whole channel dedicated to Siswati and Zulu, and that, like, we have one show that represents people? No, bye. Like, no. So I think for me, that's so important.
But I think, again, it's also because English is so aspirational and this is what we've been taught.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was in, not even primary, pre-primary. And I remember that I used to speak isiZulu at home. And then my report card came back and the English teacher wrote that she was concerned about my English and my ability to speak English. So at home, they then stopped speaking English, Zulu, and we started speaking
For
English,
real?
Right? So that my English improve. And best believe it did.
Girl, you speak so well.
I speak well. And I started reading more. And I started watching more TV, consuming more TV to be able to.
Right.
Because my grand was worried that
That's so sad.
My child wouldn't be able to speak English. What has happened is that over the years, I've now forgotten how to speak my own African language. And it's so sad because now I'm 22 and I can have a conversation with someone, but it's like, it's broken Zulu. Whereas...
No, now I feel that way is closer. It's actually...
You know, it's broken. And my friends and I were having this conversation that, you know, there was a time where I used to think in Zulu and translate in English. Now I think in English and then translate everything around.
When I was 3 or 4, when I started like... preschool, I couldn't speak English, right? And my brother, who's 6 years older than me, was kind of maybe, I don't know, kind of mid-primary school. So he'd already learned English. And I remember I used to like make up words because I wanted so badly to be able to communicate the way that he did. Because it was made this really aspirational thing. And the other thing that we do is we equate it to intelligence, right?
Yes, we
which
do.
Is a huge problem, and it's something we all do by mistake. Mm-hmm. It's really hard not to. You know, we don't do it with French people who speak broken English. We don't do it with German people who speak broken English. But if you're African and you speak broken English,
or dumb.
Exactly.
Or dumb. And I think
straight up.
Yes. So I think I've now had to unlearn that. I've had to now say, okay, I'd like to speak Zulu at home again, which is a bit weird and awkward, but we try.
Yeah.
You know, we try to keep it. And my grandmother is a lady who can speak 4 or 5 different languages. And I'm like, why didn't you ever teach me these languages?
Let me just tell you. No, it's such a problem that, and I'm going to come out and be honest about this. It's such a problem for me that the other day, like, I don't speak to my gran on the phone that much anymore. And actually, I have this dread when I go and visit her. And I love, you know, I love going to her village. I love spending time in that environment. You know, there's so much about it that's so rewarding to me. So, you know, there's something very sentimental about that lifestyle because we grew up visiting my grandmother a lot. But the more I learned to speak English and the more it kind of diluted my Xhosa, made it very difficult for me to go there and be confident. And whenever my grandmother calls, and I think she's starting to get the sense that I don't want to build a relationship with her and that there's something wrong, right? Like, you know, maybe I think I'm better than her or I'm not interested in her anymore. And I think sometimes my family thinks the same thing, but it's actually just because of the communication challenge. It's actually just because when I speak to her on the phone, it's very, very difficult for me to express myself like I used to. And so it creates, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now that's affecting like my relationship with my I mean, that's crazy.
It's so crazy. It's weird. So I think we just need to, and I think the solution to that is just to see more content that is in vernacular. That's it. You know, I don't mind, you know, people can consume hours and hours of television, but I promise you they would consume the same amount of TV if there was something that spoke to them directly. I've seen that people don't mind spending money. They don't mind spending their time. They don't mind giving up something they love for something that is worthwhile and something that speaks to them. And, you know, we have these jokes. I remember growing up that, oh, Xhosa women are this and Zulu women are this. And this is like Xhosa women and Zulu women. We laugh about it, but I miss those jokes that my grandfather and my grandmother would tell me, because then you'd understand when you meet another person, when you go somewhere and you travel, you're like, oh, I'm Zulu. Oh, my gosh. And there's things that you guys relate on. I mean, I've the teachings that my grandmother taught me, they are very, they're traditionally based. So I can tell you that, okay, when this happens, this is what it means. When this goes, but I only articulated in English. So best believe when I go to Natal.
And it takes away so much from what it said, right?
Now I'm going to be like, ish, yeah, I know what this means, but now I'm speaking English. No, child.
It takes away everything.
No. So I think those are the two things I think that have really touched my life.
But that's the thing that people don't understand. It's not just a language thing. It is thinning our culture and our interactions.
Yes, it is. I'm Christian, so there's certain traditional practices that I don't practice anymore because of my Christianity, but I do know of them.
Right.
And it's been so sad to see things, how they've kind of been diluted.
Mm.
Like something as simple as ilobola. I love that. When I get married one day, best believe he's going to pay you all.
Yes, sir.
I believe in that. And then now the conversations that you're buying a woman and no, it's not. It's not an exchange. I'm not selling myself to you. I'm not. No.
But also, you can't apply Western ideology to African ideology.
But that's what's going on. That's why we're having those conversations where, yeah, you've been
you
bought.
You can't unpack same way.
And now this man owns you. No, he doesn't own you. If he puts his hands on you, you have every right to leave that man.
Difficult.
And people don't understand why that was even started, because we have so many other people in our ears telling us that, why is that going on?
And they're trying to translate our stories, where it's actually a different kind of thinking.
Yes,
do you know what I'm saying? So that's
it
really
is.
Sad.
So, I think if we just need to just go back to who we are and just telling our story. I think the one thing is we tell so many South Africans ownership, get the land back. But we don't ever tell them to own
their stories.
Own their stories.
Because that is such an important property, right? Sure.
Yes. Like, own you.
Your narrative is the most important thing you have.
Yes. You don't need to, be somebody else. You just need to own you. And I promise, there's something, you know, there's a reason why that we fall in love with people that are themselves. Mm, you know,
that's really powerful.
There's a reason why.
Mm, I told you, school is in, guys. School is in. So speaking more about these untold stories and owning our narratives, and how actually so many of these stories are just authentic South African conversations that happen on a daily basis. What are some of the other stories you think are untold? Where are some of the other places you'd kind of like to be a fly on the wall?
Ooh, schools.
Yeah, me too.
School. I remember my mind as a teenager. I thought I knew it all. And so when somebody would say, you know, you're going to get over this, I'm like, no, my life is over. You
know, so dramatic.
Like, he broke up with me.
Everything was the end of the world.
Like, he kissed another girl. Or like, oh, I don't have, like, everybody's wearing like this brand of shoes and I don't have it. It was so dramatic. And I'd love to just go back to different kinds of schools. So I was afforded the chance to go to a middle class, whatever they call it.
Model C, yes.
School, that, yes. And I'd just like to have those conversations that go on with...
Me too, dude.
With teachers and kids. I think that would be epic.
Me too, dude. Because you know what that will tell us? So much about where our country is going.
Yes. And also, how can we change the school system? Mm. Yes, I see fees must fall, but that's a varsity, tertiary level. And that's a different struggle all on its own. We need to go back to the fact of what's going on in high schools. Why are we saying it's 30%? Why are we saying the pass rate should be 30%, number one? Why are we getting to that point where we're just lowering the marks so that kids can pass? What is it about? Is it the teachers? Is it the school? Why do we study, you know, why do we have to all study mathematics? You know, I still question that. Like, I've never used algebra a day in my life.
Dude, and I did fine. Like, I did so badly in matric math. And I was on standard grade, I did badly. Like, they even lowered the standard for me. And still, I did badly. You know what? I think I'm okay.
Yeah. Why? And also opening up the conversation of, like, in high school, well, not even high school, both primary and high school, where we as black kids weren't allowed to speak vernacular languages.
There we go.
And one thing I remember having, my friends and I were so frustrated. We're like, I'm Zulu, you Xhosa, you Sotho, you Tswana. And yet, I know how to communicate with somebody who's not Zulu. I did not learn that at home. I took that responsibility on to say, hey, I'm Zulu. I speak Zulu, but you are Xhosa, so what does this word mean? So that the next time you say it, I know what it means. Sure. So also taking that responsibility to say, I want to learn.
It's like proper nation building.
Right? Yes. I want to learn. Why is it, you know, why does it come across that white people don't want to learn our language? Yeah. I don't mind, like, honestly, I don't mind teaching you Zulu. I don't mind us talking in Zulu. In fact, it would be great. I remember conversations where my friends and I would say something in Zulu. Everybody gets it except the one Indian chick. And we're like, damn, now we need to translate.
And it ruins the joke.
Like, what the? And you know, you're not even, you're like, what the, how do I translate
this? How do you even begin? But it's worth it.
And you're like, but girl,
But you would try and it's worth it.
You know? And so, it got to a point by us doing that. She learned a couple of words where we are like, okay, now you know, skisa. And having that conversation, I think that would be great.
Dude, but also just, you know, teaching, like you were saying earlier on, so powerful. Just teaching kids from a young age to own their narratives, to own their stories.
Yeah. And it's okay. You know, and just also learning different things about different people. My background was it's full of color because I took the decision to say whichever high school I go to, wherever I go, I'm going to make the best of it. And then going and living in the suburbs where, you know, I live in the burbs, I take taxis, I go to this high school, which is, it has a reputation, but then also saying, I'm going to make sure that I grab those opportunities. So also teaching young people that you could be in a township right now and you can still make it work for you. Mm. You don't just see your environment as the be it or end it of everything. Because,
but also don't believe the stories that you're told about yourself and your situation.
Yes. And I think we need to, we can't wait until someone has matriculated to tell them that you have a future. Oh, you need to tell them at grade 8, at grade 9. I was so blessed and to have my sister take me to a place where, you know, I did some test thingies to see which career I should go for.
Psychometric test.
Yes,
right.
And that was such... It was such eye-opening because my grandma was like, you're going to be an engineer. Mm. And then I did that test and they're like, yeah, you're quite creative. So you should go with the more creative careers. And then my grandma was like, okay, this is who you are. So let's build on that. So how can you generate wealth from that? How can you make money from you being creative? And that opened that conversation. And I think young people need to also take the time to discover who are you. What do you want to? You can make money doing anything. You can make money from selling a painting. You can make money speaking. You
if
can make
you allow
money.
Your mind to go yes. there, and you stop believing what you're told about
yes.
who you are and where you are in life.
But too many times, I was in high school, and there was a time where I was like, I'm going to be a chartered accountant because A, there's a shortage, and B, I'm black and I'm female, so I know I'm going to get that job. And but I hated numbers. I was just like, this doesn't make me
but
happy.
That's a narrative that we're sold, is that here are where the opportunities are for black women, and so that's where black women should go, right?
And I think if we need to go into the schools before they matriculate, guys. It is too late to go to a school when they're in matric and be like, these are the career options you have. No, you need to tell them when they grade 8, grade 9, grade 10, when it's still like, okay, what am I doing with my life? Because also too many young people who are 16 don't know what they want to do. I'm not saying have a 5-year plan, but tell me what at least, you want to be like Oprah? You want to be like this? You want to be like that? They're like, I don't know. I'll see when I get there.
And then
like,
it's so easy for them to fall into kind of pre-packaged careers and life paths.
Yes. And it's like, it's scary because, and then you see how like the narrative's like, oh, now he's 18, can't get a job, he doesn't know what to do with his life, and how he's chilling at the street corner, and how that narrative is going down, and how like every black person is just chilling and they don't care about their future. It's like they actually do. No one's giving them the time or the attention to say, hey, what do you want to do? I'm listening to you right now. This is your time. Tell me. And not judge them. If you want to be a rapper, cool. Too many times people have
those
been told.
Those are the biggest monopolies, huh?
Yeah.
Is actually people's stories. It's not, you know, like, land is one thing. And I love that you made that parallel.
Yeah,
but if we're thinking about imperialism and monopoly, the biggest issue we have is with our narratives and our stories.
Yeah.
And who we're told we are. That's amazing. that is amazing. That I mean, that there needs to be a TRC just for that.
Yeah,
that is incredible. I love that. okay, so I'm just like so overwhelmed by how powerful that is. So why then do you think that podcasting is the most powerful way to address these things? And if so, then why?
Yes. But I also think a podcast on its own, no. Like, I think it needs to be packaged with how people consume things every day. So, yes, I listen to podcasts, but a good podcast will get me to come back at work and be like, yo, guys, did you listen to this? Yeah. And then that conversation, and then we start drawing on other things.
Podcasting as a medium so powerful in a society like South Africa with an audience like South Africans?
Well, I mean,
and our media landscape.
Yeah. So I think, you know, to actually use what Cliff Central stands for, it's uncensored, it's unscripted, it's unradio. It's changing the way people do things. You know, before I used to get into the car, put my headsets in, and you listen to somebody speak for 5 minutes or less than 5 minutes, and then play songs for 25 minutes. So even whatever conversation that was being had, it's kind of lost because they've been playing songs for 25 minutes. Whereas with a podcast, those are conversations that are not 5 minutes. There are 45 minutes, an hour, 3 hours.
And there's room for more variety, right?
Yes. And you get to, and you also get to hear different voices. So we could have easily started off like, so our conversation started off one way. But because we've given ourselves time to talk and dissect different things, it's gone a different way. And it's also made me say, oh, okay. Oh, all right. And hopefully other people, when they listen to it, it also changes the way, wherever they are. They're like, oh, I never thought of it like that. Oh, that was so hard.
Do you think digital media and podcasting in particular, in a sense, can be like the democracy of our media landscape? You know, if we talk about stories being monopolized.
Yes.
Do you think something like podcasting can help to democratize storytelling?
Yes. Purely based on the fact that it's, you have a white canvas in front of you and you can do whatever you want. You can tell whatever story you want. If you want to talk about relationships, you can get into that and dissect relationships, what makes it successful. If you want to talk about business, you can get into it. You can talk about the ugly, the beautiful, the nice, the profit, the non-profit, the losses, the shocks out there. But it allows you to have that conversation, or a chance of having that conversation.
And anyone can do it, right?
Yes, as long as you kind of know what you're talking about.
Sure, of course.
I've listened to podcasts where people think that, yeah, because I've had other people do it, because they make it sound easy, that I can do it as well. And then you listen, you're like, no, child.
No, but also you'll know that very quickly, because people won't respond to you, right?
Yeah.
Or people will make comments. You know what I mean? Like, you have more access, I think, to your listenership.
Yeah. And
even if it's just crickets, you know, then you know it's just crickets.
Yeah. So and I think you get feedback, but you're also in somebody's ear for like 45 minutes.
So you have to up your game, girl.
Yeah, you are in legit somebody's ears for 45 minutes. You are in their lives for 45 minutes. They're so listening to you, and they're giving you their time. And it just forces you to not just be like, yeah, I have a mic, so I'm going to shoot whatever garbage.
Yeah. Which is what happens lot in traditional broadcasting and television.
Yes, because similar to, you know, sex sells in the entertainment industry, a lot of rubbish or whatever's trending sells as well in the typical broadcasting space. And they don't want to have those, you know, uncomfortable conversations. We would rather see what's trending on Twitter and be like, yeah, let's talk about that and add our 2 cents and read everybody's tweets, than for them to be like, you know, this is what's going on. What's your take on it? What do you think? Do you think it's right? No, yes. They're very scared to do that, and it's sad.
So you spoke about the difference between a good and a bad podcast and how easy it is to think you're a good podcast but actually not be. So, you know, being a producer and being exposed to the content that you are on Cliff Central and the different shows, what would be your advice for people for content pioneers to get ahead in podcasting?
I would, if you want to do a podcast, listen to other podcasts, number one.
Sure.
Before you even are like, yeah, I want to get the mic. It's so important for you to hear what's out there, to hear how people have tackled a certain issue. And if you want to talk about relationships, listen to relationship podcasts.
Sure.
Don't go now listening to criminal podcasts. That's not going to help you. Because you kind of are going along the lines of what people are already producing. And you also need to just bring your flair to it. The one thing about doing a podcast is that you need to know your ish. You need to know what you stand by, and you need to ensure that you are able to not just come across as some ignorant person, but someone who's educated and well-versed, but still be entertaining.
Like you!
And I think that's so important. You need to find your story and your narrative and how you want to tackle it. As I said, if you want to talk about relationships, what are you going to talk? Mm. What do you bring to the table? And also just ensuring that you are well versed in that. Mm. There was a podcast that I listened to like last year, which is it just cracks me up. It was about a guy who he wanted to talk about health, but he was not a doctor. And it's okay. I mean, it's okay. You can talk about health and not be a doctor if you bring the right people in.
Yeah. And if you don't take a scientific approach, it depends.
Yeah,
you know.
True. And we thought, okay, this guy's, you know, when we start listening, so we're like, he's not a doctor, but hey, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's going to tell us about other things and bring doctor friends and ask the questions. And he got it so wrong. he didn't even get the a term such as CPR, right? He was like CPU. He was like, CPU? What? No. And
are you sure he wasn't a comic?
No, he was not. He was legit talking about health, but because he didn't know anything about it, it was funny, but not in a good way. So we're like, I'm never listening to this guy ever again. So it's important for you to just be educated on whatever subject you're tackling, whatever you're going to talk about. If you're going to talk about breakups, Google breakup. Get people that have been in breakups to talk about these stories. And also be mindful that sometimes you might think you're going to bring a guest and that guest is not the most well-spoken person.
Yeah.
You also need to think about the listeners who's listening to your podcast, that it's important for them to be entertained. Like, if I came and I spoke like this...
Girl, you would have been done by now, I assure
time,
you.
It's okay for you to cut me and be like, you know, thank you so much after one question. And I think people
listeners
are
listeners first. Yes. It's the hardest thing to get right as a host. But listeners first.
Yeah, like even if it's your mom and she's not bringing it, you need to just cut it.
Oh my God. Okay, and then finally, speaking of things we could do better, what would you like to hear more of on the Made Sessions?
Oh, guys. I think I'd like to get more people that are just, I think you're everyday South Africans.
Yeah.
Who have an interesting story to find. And I know it's kind of broad what I'm saying, but I think there's so many I'm the one South African who didn't have a helper. But like getting somebody else who has like stories to share, you know, and some, you know, most of the times, I know this is putting like a downer on it. We see domestic workers in this positive light, but I think it would be so cool to also hear some of the negative things that they've done. You know, I think it would be so intriguing, you know,
just to humanize them.
Yeah. You know, like so many times we're like, yeah. And the owner and the worker did this to her. And we're like, you.
No, because I think there are two ways to humanize somebody. Yeah. Right. It's about highlighting the positive things about their humanity, but also then highlighting their faults as well. You know,
and. So I think we always put this pedestal that, yeah, you know, domestic workers, they can do no wrong. And it's like they've done they have done wrong.
We all have. We're human
beings. Yes, and we just
But
need
I
a
think
balance.
We're trying to counter the story.
Yes.
Right? That's often told by people to one another. Maybe not publicly, but you know, behind closed doors, all you hear is the negative and the negative.
Yeah, but I think we also need to put that on blast because I for one did not have a domestic worker, so I'm just like, I'm always intrigued to listen
to
stories and be like, oh, Gandhi, this week, oh, they actually really do that. This is not just myth. This is not a him, as people would say. This is actually legit true. So,
okay. Yeah. No, we're all about keeping it real, and we'll definitely take that on board. I think that makes sense. And it's always a question of how you do it. But, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense. I have thoroughly enjoyed having you here. You're the bomb.com.
You don't try.
You succeed. And you're one of those people who's definitely like far too modest. But I think it's a good quality because you don't see it coming. Whoa. You've been such a delight, such a treat.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining me. Any last words?
You guys can do best. Follow me on Twitter at like Zim Teta. And yeah.
Awesome sauce. thank you for joining us on the main sessions of cliffcentral.com. Do continue to join us. Hopefully this has provided kind of the fresh perspective that I'd hoped. And keep listening to us. Love you guys. Bye.
Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.